Welcome to Minority Landlords Podcast, your manual to financial freedom. Are you looking to escape the 9-to-5 rat race? Do you want to earn passive income while building generational wealth for you and your family and don't know how to get started? Well, you're at the right place. Here at Minority Landlords, we're here to help educate minorities about real estate investing. And now your host, Pepe Amoti.
Hey, my host Pepe with a new episode of Minority Landlords Podcast. And today we'll be chatting with Kim from Harris Properties. For the folks interested in Section 8, you'll love this episode. And before we dive into this episode, I'd like to tell you all this episode is sponsored by Pathfinder.io. Pathfinder is a revolutionary mobile app designed to streamline the rental application process for both landlords and tenants. Using cutting-edge technology, Pathfinder matches landlords and their properties with possible renters. Like the dating app Tinder, the matching process is based on information provided by both parties and thus can help both landlords and prospective tenants save a lot of money, time, and reduce the frustration that we all feel when dealing with the tenant selection process. Pathfinder helps match landlords with exactly the tenants they want. So go check out pathfinder.io for more information. Now back to Kimberly. I'm super thrilled to have you today and welcome to Minority Landlords Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Good, good. Thank you for coming on today. Yeah, so tell us just a little bit more about yourself, a little bit about your story and how you got started in real estate investing.
Okay, well, again, like you said, my name is Kimberly. I am the owner of Harris Properties, LLC. I am in Columbia, South Carolina. My real estate journey started, I would say, 2008, but I didn't really go full steam ahead until maybe 2018. And in 2020, during the pandemic, is when I realized that I really needed to increase my rental portfolio. But yeah, I definitely started out with just one rental. Mm-hmm. I had a friend live in it for some years, and that's how I got my taste of rental.
Oh, that's so. Was that a single family or a?
Yes, they're all single family homes.
Oh, all of those.
Yeah. South Carolina and the city I live in, they're not big on multifamily.
Oh, gotcha.
Mainly single families.
Okay. So what's your current, it seemed like your current strategy is investing in single families. And from what I understand, you more like rent more to like Section 8 tenants. Are all your tenants Section 8 or just some of them? How's that?
Just currently I have two. I have five properties right now. Two of them are Section 8.
Gotcha.
I've had pretty good experience with my Section 8 tenant holders. No tearing up my property. They've been great. I have nothing negative to say about my Section 8 tenants.
Oh, that's awesome.
I actually suggest other people try to rent to them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely agree. Section 8 can be very lucrative if you know what you're doing. And I think it's time for, you know, for us to get rid of all this misconception about how all Section 8 tenants are bad, because it's not true.
That's not true.
And I'm sure you can attest to that.
Yes. And then vetting is the key to finding a very good tenant.
Right.
Section 8 or non-Section 8. You have to vet.
No, that's so very true.
Weed out. That's how you weed out the bad apples.
Yeah, no, that's true. So what's usually your vetting process? How do you do your vetting typically?
Typically, once I do, they call me and I do, you know, some people, they will have them fill out some type of screening paperwork, but usually I'll set up an interview. Kind of, to me, it's an interview when you come to the house to view the property.
Right.
So it depends. Are you punctual?
Right.
You know, if I have a time schedule for you to show up, are you going to be on time? I look at that. I look at how you present yourself. If you can follow simple instructions,
right?
If there's something on a listing, I post it, and then you're going to ask me the same question, like, is this a 3-bedroom or 2-bedroom?
Right.
It's on, you don't know what size rooms you came to see.
I've had that before.
Yeah. Those things I pay attention to because I feel like we're going to have problems communicating.
Exactly.
And that we need to be able to communicate if you're going to live in a property.
Mm-hmm.
I do background check. I do mm-hmm. credit check. Credit check is not very important because when they're on a voucher, mm-hmm. you know, their credit is not going to be the best, you know, so credit doesn't play a huge part. But mm-hmm. I do like to see that you don't owe a lot of people money as well.
Right.
And don't pay your bills. Mm-hmm. And I like for them to be employed mm-hmm. to a certain degree. So, but I mean, you don't have to be. Like one of my tenants is her daughter's has special needs.
Mm-hmm.
So she receives a disability check. So she's home to take care of her daughter. So, I mean, it's just, and then I always check the previous landlord.
Right.
That's, you must check to see how they were as with their other landlord. So with both of mine, I was able to get in contact with both of their previous landlords
mm-hmm.
and they gave excellent reviews. I mean, said they were great, great tenants. Hate to see them go.
Oh, that's true. So I feel like it's basically just doing like a secondary background check because they do get vetted by the Section 8 folks as well, right?
Mm-hmm. They do to a certain degree.
Okay. Right.
To a certain degree, but they told me to do your due diligence as well. Don't depend on us solely. So they do request that you do your due diligence. And that's part of my due diligence. I figure I do the same. You go through the same process. You have to vet them just like you do someone that's not on Section 8.
Right. No, that's true. And so for those that aren't really familiar with Section 8, like myself, who's still learning and try to get into this niche,
mm-hmm.
Most of them have the voucher ready and then they reach out to you?
Yes.
Or some of them, they're still in the process. Like, how does that play out?
They have to have a voucher ready to go. Yeah, they have the voucher and it lets them know what bedroom size they can get. They can get a three bedroom. If you have a three bedroom house,
mm-hmm.
I'm not taking anyone with a two bedroom voucher.
Right.
Because that's less money. So I always make sure your voucher has to be three bedrooms. And then once I approve that person, they will let housing know they found a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Then housing will submit. I have to fill out some paperwork. Mm-hmm. Usually it's done digitally on the phone, DocuSign. And they submit it to housing. Housing will then contact me and then say, hey, we need to come and inspect the unit because it has to pass their inspection process to be approved for them to move in.
Yeah.
And once they approve it, I can have my tenant sign a lease.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they sign a lease, they can move in. They could sign a lease on the fifth of the month and they can move in on the fifth. Or they could sign in on the 20th of the month and sign and move in on the 20th. So before it used to be, it had to be the first of the month.
Mm-hmm.
At least I know for South Carolina, it had to be the first of the month. But I think they changed it because of how hard it is for them to find a place.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting them move in immediately. Okay. And then you would just get back rent.
So you start getting, once they move in, the Section 8 start paying you right away. You don't have to wait a month and whatnot.
Well, she moved in, I say my tenant moved in on the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
I got paid on the 1st.
Okay. I see.
Okay. And then they prorated the month she moved in
mm-hmm.
and tacked it on to the 1st as well.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. So as long as all the paperwork gets in, then sometimes you got to get on housing. We have here is called a landlord liaison. So instead of us going to their caseworker, mm-hmm. we can contact the landlord liaison and they are basically in contact with all the caseworkers. So it makes it streamlines it. It's so much easier to have one contact. And that person, I say, hey, I got a tenant moving in. Here's the lease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when would I get payment? Any paperwork I send to that one person. Because a lot of them, they have different caseworkers. So it makes it so easy when you contact one person and they can get it all done.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. So regarding your deal sourcing and whatnot, let's talk about that a little bit. So how do you usually get your deals? Do you get them off market or through MLS? Like how does that play out?
I get them through the MLS.
And how do you finance them?
Financing is through a commercial lender.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't do regular banks.
Okay, so you just
commercial lending.
Okay, I see. So you say you have 5 single family homes right now and they're all Section 8. So can you walk us through one of your deals that you thought maybe it was really great, like exactly what you're expecting?
Well, I have one that I was that I just closed on in July, my last one. And you know, during this time, the last few months, interest rates have been creeping and creeping and creeping.
Oh yeah, it's been crazy out there.
I was I was kind of antsy about locking in a rate.
Mm.
And this property, particular property, was it was $100,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had it listed as a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and it was tenant occupied. And I was always dead set against, I'm not going to buy a property with a tenant in place, because I didn't vet that tenant, particular about vetting my own tenant. The only thing that made me not say no is because they were on month to month. And so I said, okay, well, that gives me more of a chance. If they're not good tenants, I can have them leave. I can request that they vacate.
Right, right.
So, and then this was one of those situations where I couldn't see the property until I was under contract. And that kind of was another scary moment for me, because I always have to see the property.
Same.
Before I put an offer in.
I always fly out of state because I have, you know, so many properties out of state. I have to see it. There's just no way.
I want to put my eyes on it. Yeah. I don't want to go in blindly, because there'd be so many things wrong and you don't know. Pictures can't tell you everything.
That's true.
And this one had no pictures on the inside, just the outside.
Right.
But I knew the area well.
Mm.
And it was a decent area. And I said, ooh, it's only $100,000. And I was actually in Myrtle Beach. I was out of town when it hit the market. And I told my realtor, I said, go ahead. And if they were asking 95, I said, put an offer in for 100. Because honestly, in my mind, a cash buyer was going to take it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I said, that's a cash buyer all day long. But I said, I got to be in it to win it. You know what I mean?
Especially, I had to try. Right. Especially a few months ago, people are just overbidding on everything.
Overbidding. So I said, well, put an offer in for 100. I figure I ain't going to get it, but I'm going to try anyway.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my realtor called me. She said, well, they got a cash offer in. But she couldn't tell me the amount. And I said, oh, well. I said, okay. Well, then she called me back. I think the next day, it was like the cash offer. They did not provide proof of funds with the owner's name, the person who's purchasing the property name on it. So they said, unless you can provide us with that document with your name on it by this time, we're going to go. I was the backup. So they're just going to go with my offer. And I was on pins and needles because I was like, oh, I'm contacting her every few hours. Did they submit the paperwork? Did they do this? Did they do this?
Yeah.
So finally, the seller stalled because I knew they preferred cash.
Mm.
So they gave them all weekend to submit the document. And then that Monday, I finally found out they just told them, no, we're going to go with the backup. So that was like shocking that I got that house.
Yeah.
And then when I finally went and did the inspection, it's a 4-bedroom. It's not even a 3-bedroom.
Oh, wow.
So that's even more money when it comes to, because my numbers were showing a 3-bedroom rent. And my number said I would get this much in profit for a 3-bedroom with the mortgage being this amount.
Yeah.
But being that it's a 4-bedroom, I said, oh, that's just icing on the cake.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because we did our inspection.
How did they even make that mistake? How did that happen?
I don't know.
That's like hitting a jackpot there.
I looked at the tax records. The tax records said 3-bedroom, 2-bath. But there's a property that was sold. An investor purchased it on the same block.
Yeah.
It has the same layout. And I went on Zillow and saw it when it was listed for rent.
Mm.
And they have it listed as a 4-2. And I looked at the tax record. Tax record say 3-2. I said, this is the same exact property. It's just, you know, a couple of doors down. It's just, you know, same layout.
I need that kind of luck in my life.
That was the best luck. Because I sure enough was like, oh, I almost didn't get it because a cash offer got, you know. Right. I thought I got outbidded by a cash offer. And I was like, look at that. That was like the best deal. The only thing I didn't like was my interest rate. I have a over 7% interest rate.
Yeah, that's the problem with these commercial products. Sometimes can be a really high interest rate. But yeah.
But that was like icing on the cake. And the tenants, I closed in July. The tenant, because I told him your rent's going to go up. But he was charging, that was pre-pandemic. Right. He has not gone up on the rent since they lived there. So they were getting away with low. I told them, this is your option. You can stay or, but this will be the new rent. I'm going to give you 60 days to adjust, but this will be the new rent. And at first they said, oh, we'll move. And then a week later, I guess they realized they can't find anything. Because I do my due diligence. I'm looking at the market. I'm looking to see, okay, what are they charging for a house this size, this number of rooms? So I don't want to go higher. But I'm going to put it in a ballpark that's close where you're going to pay a little less, but you're not going to pay as much as someone else is charging. And they realized that. And it's like, is it too late? Can we stay? I was like, sure, you can stay at the new rate.
Yeah, that's a problem too. Like you brought up a good point. Like a lot of investors, some folks get, especially newbies, I see that a lot. And even I was like that for some time, like getting scared of putting my rent at market rate. Mm-hmm. But guess what? If they refuse, when they go online, they are searching for apartment, they'll find most stuff to be around the market rate, market right? Rent. So they might end up saying, oh, I'll just stay here. Or that's if they right. leave, okay. then it's good. Mm-hmm. And like for me personally, a lot of times when tenants have moved out, it's been a blessing because then I bring somebody in at the current market rate.
Charge more. Right? Yes, right. So. Charge more. That's one of the best deals I think I've had was the last one I just purchased.
That's awesome. Where
it was a 4-bedroom and not even a 3.
I've never heard of this before. That's just incredible. Yeah, you need to hook me up with your neighborhood. I gotta start looking around that area now.
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I didn't realize when I was doing the inspection. Yeah. I had my handyman. We went in there and we looked at all the rooms. We looked to make sure the roof was good, no leaks. Yeah. And then I called my brother when I got home to tell him how everything went. And I'm like, okay, we went in this room. Yeah. And in this room, you know, that I said, wait a minute, that was 4 rooms we were in. I had to call the realtor back and my handyman. Yeah. I said, you know, we looked at 4 bedrooms, right? They was like, you're right, we did it. So they didn't even catch it. They yeah. didn't catch it.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was my best deal, I would say.
How about like any worst deal out there? Or things been pretty okay for the most part?
No, it's been pretty okay because like I said, I'm always inspecting the property before I put an offer on it.
And you haven't had to deal with evicting those Section 8 tenants and whatnot?
No, oh, I've never great. Had to evict the Section 8. I had that's to evict the non-Section 8 tenant, but not a Section 8.
Okay, gotcha. So just for the future, so what are your short-term goals and long-term goals? Are you trying to buy more properties? Yeah. Are you trying to stick with your niche or trying to explore other niches and whatnot? Like what's your short-term and long-term goals?
Well, my long-term goal is to buy more properties. Right now, like we talked about, the interest rates are just climbing up a little too high. So I got to be content with what I have right now. Yeah. So yeah, long-term goal is just to stick with what I know, mm-hmm. which is rentals. I'm not into Airbnb. Yeah. Short-term rentals are not my thing. That's more work.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm trying to
do the least amount of work as possible.
That's a good point you just brought up. It's very important to stick with what you know. Like, yes, it's always be willing to go out there and venture out and learn. But still, like, you should really stick to what you know. Like even Warren Buffett, I think, is the one that always said, like, you always invest in what he understands. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I feel like in real estate, it's not rocket science, but at the same time, you got to make sure that you really understand whatever your strategy is.
Yes.
And don't just be floating around. Mm-mm. Even if it's pretty, it's not just easy to lose money in real estate, but you can be in big trouble if you don't know what you're doing as well.
So
that's a really good point to just brought up.
You sure can. And I do a lot of, since I started my IG, page and following a lot of other investors, I've learned a whole lot, especially during the pandemic. That's what I've really been focusing on is learning about real estate. Every little thing I try to pick up on and just stay educated.
That's true. That's very important.
You got to keep learning.
And I like your sort of what you say too about kind of putting on brakes on purchasing and whatnot with this high interest rate. I feel like that's kind of most of our story at the moment. And I feel like, at least personally for me, it's like for me, I'm using this time as more to do some fixes, make some renovations, kind of upgrade whatever needs to be upgraded. And a lot of time you think like, oh, we need new units, but you don't know, maybe like you can just upgrade whatever you have. Get more money out of it, right?
Yeah.
So at this time, I would say just chill and lay back, but you can always find how you can improve whatever you have and be
able prices are not dropping, at least not in South Carolina. The homes are still $100,000 and up. I mean, so it's not like I could see I'm getting a house that was 100 for 50.
Right.
Where I say, oh, I have to jump on it. I'm not seeing that. It's just not going to balance out. So I continue to look. I look on my realtor sent me a list. I get a list of the homes that the price range and it comes to my email. So every time one pop up, I look at it like I got the money to buy it.
I feel like that's all of us right now. Just window shopping.
Just window shopping.
Just in case.
Just in case.
I love this. I love this. We have a couple of minutes here. I'll just go through some quick final questions here for you.
Okay.
I could talk to you forever. I really love your energy and what you're doing. It's just amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, just few final questions. What was your dream job growing up? Like, was
accountant.
It
accountant? I wanted to be an accountant. Yeah, financing. I love math.
And now you're in research. Are you in research full time now, or are you still in corporate, or are you still working as well while you're?
I'm real estate full time. I left corporate 7-8 months ago.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
24 years I was in corporate.
That's America. Awesome. That's awesome. And what advice would you give to new real estate investors who are just getting started, minority real estate investors, or just any newbies out there? What advice would you give them?
Patience. It's not going to happen overnight.
True.
Right. Please be patient, because everybody think, you see these investors with all these properties, and it didn't happen overnight. It takes time. Educate yourself.
No, that's
you
a good
yourself.
That's a good point just brought up, and that's the other thing I see in the real estate community. Some folks, like, it seems like you kind of do things your own sort of at the moment, and sort of like what I'm doing to most of, you know, pretty much everything I own them, you know, myself. And there's a lot of folks out in the real estate community say, oh, I have $400 million of real estate, but it's through syndication. It's like, it's technically assets under, you know, management. It's like they might own 0.005% of it, but they'll say, oh, I own $400 million. Right. So, and it makes some newbies be like, oh my God, this thing, you can just get it like this really quick. Right. No. It's not, it's a long-term game. You just gotta play it right and make sure that, like you said earlier, educate yourself and just make sure you're doing it the right way.
Yeah, that's what I would say for anybody that's wanting to get into it. And
great. So last question. Yeah. So where can our audience find you or reach out to you if they want to connect?
They can reach out to me on Instagram at Aris Properties LLC. Or they can send me an email at info@arisproperties.com.
Sounds great. Hey, Kim, yes. Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure having you on today. I really appreciate you coming in.
Oh, thank you. It's a great, great interview. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Minority Landlords Podcast. Please like and subscribe and leave us a rating on iTunes so that we can reach as many people as possible. We will appreciate it if you tell your friends and family too about the podcast. Also visit us at MinorityLandlords.com.